Good morning to all of you. Welcome at this webinar titled From Outsourcing to Selling in India. My name is Maarten van der Schaaf. I'm the director of India Connected and the moderator of this session. I have the pleasure to welcome Mr. Jan Linse, CEO of ARS Traffic and Transport Technology, who's based in the Netherlands.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for being here.
Good morning to all of you. Thank you, Maarten. Thank you for having me. Pleasure.
Wonderful. Once again, good that you're here, that you can make the time, and that you are willing to share your experience of 20 years doing business in India. Before we start, I would like to give a bit of a background to all the listeners about the organizers, India Connected, my firm, and Maya and Vidorno. India Connected is the number one Dutch advisory firm for companies that want to do business with India, that want to enter the market, that want to export to India, but also want to manufacture in India, of course. And we are based in Amsterdam. We work closely together with our German neighbors, Meyer and Vidorno, who is a bit bigger than we are, as the country is bigger. And Meyer and Vidorno has their head office in Cologne, and they have four offices throughout India. So in Delhi, or even five, Delhi, Mumbai, Pune, Bangalore, and Chennai. They were founded in 2000, so they have experience of over 20 years, like Jan's company has. Together we have a team with over 150 employees in India. And we service clients from all over the world, but, well, specifically now the listeners are coming from German-speaking countries and Dutch-speaking countries. And we really are a one-stop shop for India. We help clients with, well, you name it, market research, market entry plans. We recruit people, employ salespeople also for our clients. We set up entities, joint ventures. We advise on HR, on legal matters, fiscal matters. We also have a back office solution for exporters. So it becomes easy for foreign companies to sell in India, also to invoice in Indian rupees, and we can also take care of the logistics. So yeah, that's just in brief what we do. Before we get started with the interview, two more things. First, the practicalities. As you understand, you're all on mute. Jan and I cannot see you, but that doesn't mean that we cannot listen to you or hear you. So you can share your questions in the chat. Please do so. If you have any questions, add them to the chat. If you have them already now, put them in. If you have them during the conversation we're going to have, add them there. I'll try to get back to these questions and pose them to Jan during the conversation, at the end of the conversation. And if it doesn't work out because there are too many questions, we'll get back to you by mail. Secondly, also practicality is that we are recording this session. So we will share it with you afterwards, and you can watch it back later and share it with colleagues who might not be able to be with us here now. All right. One more thing before we start our talk, Jan, just also to give you a bit of background of who's listening and watching today. We have set up a poll with four questions. Maybe if we can get the poll on the screen, then we get some information about the listeners. So there are four questions. as a moderator, I cannot see if this is working, but hopefully it is, and then I'll see the results in a bit.
Martin, if you click on the left on polls, then you can also see the answers.
The answers. Ah, I see. So are you outsourcing to India? 33% is outsourcing, but still people are voting for this. 60% is not. Are you selling in India? Well, over 70% of listeners is already selling in India. And how do you sell in India? Is this directly via distributor, via local sales office, or not selling yet? What do we see here? A bit of a mix. Most via a distributor. Some do direct sales. Some do via local sales office. And of course, a bit that is not selling yet. This is a nice question, of course. Will India be a focus market for your sales team in the upcoming 5 years? Far big majority saying yes. And some people, of course, that might be why they are also listening to this webinar, is they don't know if it should be a focus market. So that's also interesting to talk about, Jan.
Good.
So if everybody's has voted, we start a conversation. So the topic is from outsourcing to selling in India. I already quickly mentioned, Jan, you started in India over 20 years ago. But maybe can you, because of course I can say this, but I think it's best if you introduce shortly your company and what business you guys are in. So can you give us a short introduction on what you guys are doing?
Yes, happy to do so, Martin. Well, as the name of our company says, we're doing technology in transportation. We're doing that now, and we're doing that 20 years. We did that 20 years ago. So we are what you call a product market focused company. So we have technology products for the transportation market. And that's what we do initially in Europe. And we started the company in 98. In 2001, we started in India. So if you look at it with a bit of historical consciousness, we more or less started within India and in the Netherlands simultaneously. What's our company doing? And not that the focus is on that subject, but it gives some background.
Absolutely. It's interesting to hear a bit.
So what we do is we provide the technology products that are required to keep us moving. And over time, we have focused on several subsegments. So rather than giving you an abstract view on how our market is subdivided, I give you some examples. So our business is, for instance, the business of urban traffic management, make sure that there are green zones in municipalities, by making sure that there is what we call network management, that all the traffic control systems are aligned to each other. That's software business. We provide enforcement systems, systems that ensure that people are not speeding, are not entering specific parts of the municipality, that dangerous hazardous goods, polluting goods are not transported where they should not be transported. That's partly hardware business, but also mainly a software business. As you probably have experienced yourself over the past 20 years, the traditional steel and concrete structure of mobility in general has changed more and more into a technology business. The car at present is more a lot of electronics than a lot of steel. We recently got the alarming message from the southern part of the Netherlands that the car production has stopped because the chips production has stopped. And that's actually how it is. Mobility has become a electronics and software business and rather than a steel business.
Yeah. So next time, Jan, when I get a speed ticket on the railway or on the highway, then it's your technology that has basically got me that fine, or is that
in the Netherlands we're market leader in average speed enforcement systems, or as we call it in the Netherlands, trajectcontrole system. So the majority of the tickets you receive are us to blame. So I'm sorry.
Okay.
No, but the societal impact is that 80% of all accidents, all casualties, all fatalities in traffic are caused by speeding. So
of course,
abiding to the law, we make the country more healthy and more safe. So that's the good thing.
Yeah, of course. But that's at least something people can directly relate to.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's what you guys are doing. Your software is a key component of your business. So I imagine also the title of this session is, of course, from outsourcing to selling. So you started with outsourcing to India,
one of the key challenges in the Netherlands and no doubt in Germany as well, that it is very hard to get good technicians in electronics, good technicians in software. So growth is constrained by having those people available. So the logical step is to start looking for augmentation possibilities to add people to your team. And that's the reason why we ended up in India. It checks all the boxes with respect to the shortages that we have. So indeed, that was the start. Purely, I would say, strategic, opportunistic, seeing to it that our capacity was increased.
Did you compare countries with each other, or was you like, were you immediately convinced that you had to go to India? Or
yeah, well, as being an entrepreneur, I first started to make a lot of mistakes. So I started with having contracts in with companies in other countries, and people walking away from contracts and ending up in the result in the situation that I could not support my clients any longer because I only had a contractual relationship. So I said, okay, I need to have this under control. I better have a long-term fixed relationship, best with my own company. And then I started in South America in the wrong time. So Argentina, very nice country, but in the end of the 90s, it ended up in a bad situation. So then I started thinking, so what are the parameters? What are the boxes that need to be checked? For each business, it will be different. But for software business, it's about do you have the right type of resources? Do you have the continuity? And in the end, one of the factors was also, is this perhaps a market that we might get back to? Was not the main factor that we used in the selection of the country, but it played a role.
Yeah. You don't mention even salaries. You mentioned more the lack of people in the Netherlands and the availability of other people in India, but not. I'm
Yeah, so, well, salary was, of course, important. Let's be honest, we in the Netherlands and probably also in Germany, we pay the highest salaries worldwide already. So everything is better. and India was good. But compared to India at that time, Argentina was also good. Indonesia was also good. So let's say all other countries are reasonably well, but there are more factors than salary alone. And in the end, as in other businesses, it's not only about salary. It's also about effectiveness. Are you able to communicate? Is there an IT infrastructure that allows you to interact? This all has cost impacts, and salary also has a cost impact. So yes, it was a definite plus, but the other factors were as important.
Yeah, and what I find interesting is that if you talk about IT outsourcing, it's Bangalore is of course the Silicon Valley of India. Hyderabad is known for its IT capacity. Pune in recent years is known as a place where a lot of foreign companies settle. You went to a completely different place, Trivandrum, in the absolute south of India. Why did you choose to go there? Was this pure coincidence, or?
Yeah, I could tell a beautiful rationale story, but let's be honest. No, it was coincidence, but with the benefit of hindsight, I would have made that choice. By that time, nearly 20 years ago, Bangalore and Trivandrum were not that different. Bangalore has a climate advantage. It's a bit higher up in the hills, so a bit cooler climate. But it's both at the same region in India. The climate is good. People are not that poor. There's good welfare. It's a nice place to be, and that's for software important. You need to have this strange click in your head to understand software development, and that's well developed in that part of India, Bangalore, Trivandrum, more than in northern India, where people are very communicative, very service oriented, but are not that great software developers. In this part of India, the universities are excellent, and people really have this this software gene. Big advantage now, Trivandrum compared to Bangalore. I've often been to Bangalore, so when I have a hotel 20 kilometers from the place where I need to be, well, then I take 3 hours to get to my destination in rush hour, and in Trivandrum it takes me 20 minutes. The accessibility is much better, and there are good IT facilities. So at present, it's to be preferred for me.
Yeah, nice. Interesting. Interesting to hear. We hear this from other companies as well. That smaller regional places, well, smaller for at least for European standards, smaller. I don't know how many people live in Trivandrum.
I think it's somewhere between 1 and 2 million. It's way larger than Amsterdam.
Yeah,
exactly. And it's a beautiful historical city as well.
Yeah. Okay, Jan, when did you realize that India could also be a potential market for selling your services? When was this?
Well, when I first set foot on the ground in India, my first time I was faced with the traffic situation, and all of you having been to India will probably have experienced the same. So one of my first thoughts was, okay, there is a problem. The only thing I was not really sure of whether the solutions we had in mind were also the solutions for India. And by that time, I also traveled to, for instance, China. And I had the same feeling, same chaotic situation in China as in India, as in many other East countries. So the awareness that there is a market and that a possible solution could help was there from the onset. But over time, the situation changed. I've seen the situation in China changing, infrastructure becoming rapidly better. And in India, I saw that there was a willingness to do so. But the progress in improving the traffic situation was not there. But, well, the need was present, and the willingness of India to look for solutions was present. So being there for outsourcing markets gave me the opportunity to have a lot of discussions with locals. And over time, I've realized that, yes, there was need. No, there was not an immediate solution, but there was a willingness from the Indian authorities to look for a solution. And at that point in time, we started to dig and to try to understand how the market operated and developed.
So that was because you mentioned basically that, like, basically when you started in India, you already were aware that, of course, traffic is hectic in India. It's a chaos from a European perspective. But initially, of course, outsourcing was your goal. So was this also in conversations with your local team, or what role did your local team play in growing this awareness of, hey, maybe we can get in touch with Indian authorities to suggest our solutions?
That more or less developed gradually, but let's say over time, my people over there, I'm still working in my company in India with a lot of people who were there 20 years ago. So a lot of knowledge was acquired by my Indian team on how traffic in Europe operates. So they were the first ones to see that there is a real gap. They started to understand that something like traffic management exists, and that traffic signals are not just there for cosmetic purposes to send some light over the junction, but that you can use that to regulate traffic. Mm. So during my sessions over there, I went there 3, 4, 5 times a year, and I was there a week. That was not the time I was fully able to understand it, but I had my conversations when I was there and online, and that gave me the impression that the Indian market was changing, and that the awareness of the local people that there were solutions for their huge problems were present. But then the big thing was that organizations try to more or less drop the solutions they have in hand, in our case in Europe, try to drop that in India. That does not work. And that awareness that was initially not present, initially it was tried, okay, let's try to just sell the products we use in Europe, sell them in India. And we very rapidly came to the conclusion that will never work, that the gap in the evolution was simply too large at that point in time.
Yes, that's something we hear a lot of European companies that have difficulty, but this of selling high-tech, high-value goods and services in India. And the reason is that there is not a match between the product and the market. What was the problem for your services? Which match was not there?
Well, in India, certainly not 10, 15 years ago, was not a country that could afford the type of solutions we're creating in Europe. And why are the solutions we create in Europe so expensive? And that's because we focus a lot on quality, safety, what have you. So 80% of the time we spend in the development of our products is related to exceptions and making sure that the reliability and sustainability of our solutions work. That increases the price, and exactly those factors are not of immediate importance to India. They expect a system to be delivered, to do what it's supposed to do in a happy flow situation, and they're not too much concerned, at least at that time, what it will do after a year or after 2 years, certainly not after 5 years and after 10 years. And everyone who has seen the service operations in India understand that selling and implementing is more important than keeping systems alive over a time of 5 to 10 years. And that's a different attitude in designing your products. So for us, it became important to, on the one hand, transfer our ideas on lifecycle management to our Indian relationships, because we feel that the lifecycle costs are important and more important than just the implementation costs. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, we needed to accept that the budgets were lower. So we needed to find ways to create products at affordable prices. So that's a challenge where we needed to accommodate the requirements of our customers. And on the other hand, do some knowledge transfer on life cycle management.
So what I hear you saying is that, like, it doesn't work when you just push your service like, hey, this is what we have, this is the best quality in the world, we do this everywhere, you should have this. That's not working. But you do try to get into this dialogue to explain why you do it the way you do it, but still you have to adapt your product. How can you give us, maybe, I don't know if it then might become too technical, but can you give an example of how you adapted one of your services or products that could become cheaper to the cost price?
Yeah, I have many examples. I'll try to select a few ones. But first, it's good to understand that those extremes exist, and that there, in our specific business, there is a tendency to be very much focused on hardware and not on software. A client buys something that is tangible, they can keep in their hands, they can drop, which has a value because you can see it, you can touch it. So software in the Netherlands and in Germany has a value. Software in India has no value because you cannot touch it. So you need to incorporate your software in a working product. So that's an important concept, because that's not something you tell and that is accepted at that point in time. Then there is the tendency in India to go for the cheapest product, and cheap not in the sense that it is economical, but it works and it has the lowest cost possible. So that's how the market, the local market, operates. And that's how we are serving the governmental market, business to authorities, and tenders are often shaped to work on what we call L1 basis. So there's a question from the market, and the cheapest solution, the low cost solution, it will win by definition. So you need to compete on what the requirements are and what the price is. So if the requirements are not shaped well, you will always lose as a Western company, because your quality is a bit higher, but it does not find any grounds in the evaluation criteria of your client.
So you need to influence the requirements. That's basically what you're saying.
Well, you need to tell them, I can give you a very inexpensive product, but next year you will have to buy a new one. And year after, you will have to buy a new one. And over 10 years' time, you will have bought 10 systems. And with me, you buy one, but it has maybe the price of two or three, but you can deal with it for 10 years. And that type of communication needs to be there. And my experience is, same experience, by the way, in Europe, is that you have your champions, because it's a cultural thing. And the willingness of your clients to really listen and to try this is very much dependent on whether your client has ever visited Europe, has a willingness to look for a quality price ratio. And out of, let's say, 10 prospects, 10 potential clients, maybe one or two can be considered to be a champion and to consider this. And those people are taking risks because they step out of line locally and they do something different compared to what their colleagues are doing. So it's also choosing your battles, not trying to win over complete India in one sales campaign, but look to who can be your market and who can also be the person that is really willing to listen to your sales argumentation and put the facts and the figures on the table. And in my experience, that works in the sense that out of the 10 times, 8 times it does not work, but that's sales, but 2 times it does work. And there is a willingness to listen. And the good thing is, well-educated people in India, they can calculate quite well. And if you can state to them where the advantages can be acquired, they will for sure listen.
Yeah. So interesting what you're saying. I was wondering, did you do the sales? Did you do the sales? Did your Dutch sales team was involved? Was it an Indian sales team? Was it a combination of efforts?
It's a combination. I have my local people who over time developed their relationship to the Indian community. They have an excellent network. I could never replace that. It's very cultural loaded. There's a lot of, let's say, information exchange and dealings, being continuously on the phone day and night and being at impossible places at impossible times for reasons that you can never understand, that we will not be able to copy. So you need those local people with the willingness to do that. On the other hand, you're necessary as well, because they want to have this Western solution. And trust, confidence is extremely important. And while this local salesman can bring the network capacity to the sales effort, they cannot bring the trust and the confidence part, because there is more or less a structural mistrust between Indians themselves. Are you trying to sell me something cheap? Are you telling me the right story? And that's where we come in as Dutch and German. I think we start with a trust factor. And if we are just who we are and not trying to be Indians, but just being naturals, and having a good support, local support, then that's exactly the right thing to do. Because that's what they are expecting. And if you bring that balance, then in my experience, that will convinces them that they have the right partner.
Yeah. So in summary, basically, that your local sales team is developing the network, is opening the doors. And at some point, they say to you, Jan, now it's time for you to fly in and you need to be here because we're going to meet the big boss who is going to make a decision or not. Is that in fact how it works?
Well, it's the decision making part. That's often the part where you exchange proposals and where you negotiate prices and specifications. But to win them over to consider a solution that is not the typical Indian cheap solution, low cost L1, doesn't matter how long it operates, but go for something more sustainable. That requires interaction. So typically how I worked is that my team was inside the Indian scene and worked together with them. And my phone is ringing. And they developed the network, developed the opportunities. And then approximately 4 or 5 times a year, I spared a week. I went to India with a loaded program. I traveled from south to north India in a week. I had 5-6 appointments a day and was doing the next stage in what I would call business development. Yeah. I think business development is a bit different from sales. It's the stage before in which you bring across what the pros and the cons of the proposed solution in the current conditions are. It's also about developing the relationship. I think that's an extremely important stage, and that's where we can add value.
Yeah, and you already mentioned that your clients are mostly government bodies, municipalities, cities. So this business development was also, of course, talking to these people, government officials. And what happened then? Was it indeed that, because in the end, you still had to apply, if you have to apply, for tenders, like in Europe, right? Or is there a way around this?
No, it's you need to be there in a pre-tender stage. And in comparison to Europe, in comparison to the Netherlands and India, what you do in India is you talk to the ultimate decision makers. So you do not go to the procurement office. You do not go to the operational manager. You go to the MD, to the president, to the secretary general. That's where you have your discussions. And the culture is also different. In the Netherlands, when you would go to the secretary general, he would invite his procurement people and you would be sidelined to deal with those people. In India, my experience is that at the decision maker positions, you have very ambitious people, very curious people. They want to know how things work. So that's where you have very interesting talks. Not saying that everything works out well, but you develop a relationship over there where you think alongside with the ultimate decision maker on the other side, how things could work. And yes, there are 1 million misunderstandings at that level, but there's communication and there's business development happening at that point in time.
Yeah.
But you must have the people in India that are able to reach out to the top of these organizations and make sure that when you are there, you have that type of conversation and not that you are somewhere stuck at middle management level.
Yeah. So your local team, your local sales team needs to understand that and needs to fill an agenda that's full with this relevant conversations, relevant appointments, and not with middlemen, and waste your time on this.
They must have the agility to reach to the top. And that's, in my experience, that's critical.
What challenges do you face when selling in India? We were talking about price. We often also hear about when you sold something, payment can be an issue. What about contracts?
First of all, and you must realize when you're doing business development that 80% of your efforts are wasted. So that type of frustration, but that's universal. But one should realize that, accept that you should transfer that to part of the fund. But the difference is within Europe, we tend to delegate that to our salespeople and say, okay, you take those efforts. In India, that's the type of effort you, as a decision maker from your own company, also have to take. You need to be there, you need to do that, and you also have to accept that that part of the pain. When you are in the contract, making sure that you make the arrangements for proper payments, that's really a pain. I would say out of the top 10, number 1, 2, and 3 are making sure that you get your payments. That can be of many good and bad reasons, but you have to make sure that that is pre-arranged. The Indian people, they are very much focused on that themselves. In Europe, we have the kind of naive attitude that we think, okay, this is just one article in the contract and that will be arranged automatically, and we can just count on the fact that when we have delivered that the payments will be done. That's not the case. So there's too much to say about this subject, but take care of those three items very much. So
of course you have a good legal advice for your contract, and because you're dealing this, your Indian team is dealing with this, I imagine, or
Yeah, well, one of the main challenges is that your product, selling a product, also implies that someone is receiving it. And you can be sure that when you sell a product, it will not be received by the MD. It will be received at that middle management level, that procurement level. They will collect the product. And they will have to rubber stamp it. I have received this product and it's okay. So at that point in time, they take a responsibility. And that's where the issue is. Nobody wants to take responsibility because the impact of things going wrong is huge. Having a job is an asset in India. And when you have rubber stamped the receipt of a product that later on causes an issue will cause the seniors, the MD, to go back to the people and say, okay, you said that the product was okay. Now I've paid them and the product is not good. So there's no one who really wants to take ownership for the part that is causing the pain with the client, and that's the payment part. So you have to make sure that prior to that stage, you really define how you are going to arrange this. And with software, I can tell you it's extremely complex because going through an acceptance stage with software is also a pain in Europe, and it's an even larger pain in India. But it will be a lesser problem if your products are more tangible, more standard, and then these types of problems are of a lesser issue. But at least you need to define the sales, the transaction in the contract in such a way that you think about the receipt moment, what will happen at that point in time, and how before the transaction is over, the transaction is also contractually closed, and there can be no issue about this ownership part.
Yeah. Interesting. I like what you're saying is don't be naive about any line in contracts. Probably you have a legal department in Holland, but you probably also have a legal department in India, or do you use external advisors, or how does it?
No, we have local staff dealing with it, but you guys dealing with India realize that India is a federation with a lot of states, each state having its own laws. So when you deal with India within the outside borders of India, within the federation, you cannot be aware of all the 20 odd laws you will be dealing with. It's extremely complex. It's case law. We in the Netherlands, and I think also in Germany, are used to constitutional law. That's a different line of thinking. So do not think that you can deal with it yourselves. You need to look at what's in the contract, but you also need to know what's in case law, and that's not possible to deal with that from the Netherlands or Germany.
Yeah. Okay. Maybe enough about the pain. let's maybe look at the gain. And I know that of course the Modi government is good in marketing. And one of they're promoting Make in India, and they're promoting also the smart city program. And they basically said, like, okay, we have 100 cities that need to get this stamp of being a smart city. And one of the mobility, much better mobility, is part of this. Are you benefiting from this program? Is this where you see that indeed cities have more budget to do something about the traffic situation? Can you say something more about the market and how the market is developing?
I have a lot of people in my company who have all kinds of opinions on what's happening in the Modi administration, positive and negative. I've put it all on a heap, and I've tried to get my own take out of it. And I've also participated in congresses where he was present, had the honor of being there and hearing and seeing, etc. And my conclusion is, overall, it's very positive. You need to understand it within the context, but the good thing is there's a vision. And I would say there's even more vision than we have in Europe. If you look at the smart city concept, it's not about a smart city for health, or a smart city for traffic, or a smart city for education. No, it's a comprehensive smart city, all of the important factors that have an impact on what the people are experiencing within their city are affected. So it's a comprehensive program that pushes municipalities to the next century. And they had a kind of challenge between municipalities that had to fight for the budget from the federal administration. So the municipalities did not have the luxury that they could first apply for a subsidy and then do whatever they wanted to do with it. No, they had to draw up a plan, and these plans had to compete with each other. So that had a quality increasing impact. Mm-hmm. And then there is quite some governance from the federal organization to look at whether the people are actually achieving what they have promised. You have these award schemes in India, so everything that's doing well will receive a lot of awards. We received some awards as well. But overall, I'm very positive. Of course, there are things where it goes wrong. They want to take a giant step in a very small amount of time, and it's people business, and a lot of the people being involved, they still live 20, 30, 40 years back, and they cannot make that change. So a lot of these large projects, they do not really succeed for obvious reasons, but at least there is a very positive spirit, and they want to to make this step. And to be honest, I also have good relationships at the same type of government levels in the Netherlands. And I do not see that spirit. And that's, I think, the very positive part. There's entrepreneurship at governmental level. They want to achieve something. They want to be there first. And there's also a lot to win. It's a huge country with a lot of potentials, economic potentials that require those smart city objectives to be materialized, also to achieve the economic and welfare objectives.
Yeah. So the ambition that's there is also you feel it when you're in India. Of course, the energy that's there among also young people. Maybe going shortly to your setup in India itself, I was also looking at one of the questions that was asked. Someone was saying, if you look at hiring people in India, what are the criteria you use when you hire someone for your Indian team? So maybe this is something I would be interested to hear, but maybe also more in general, can you say something about your team, what your setup there, how big is it that you have there?
Yeah, I have 250 people over there, near 300. We have several setups. Our main office is in Trivandrum, but we do projects all around India. We have them in Delhi, in Surat, in Mumbai, I think some 10 places. And it depends on hiring people. It depends on what type of business we're doing. Our core business is software development. That's where we create our products and services. We earn our money with the services itself, the services. So doing traffic management, doing operation centers, etc. So if we hire people for the operational services, then we have different criteria compared to hiring people for doing our system and software development. Hiring people for your operations, I think that's not too difficult. There's a lot of people, there's a huge market. You need to focus on where you can make the difference. Again, when you try to work at a cheap level, then you will never be able to compete within India with the locals, because the Indians, they can find cheaper people than you can find. You need to reach for people that can provide that added value, that calls you to have less attrition, to have more knowledge within the company. So your service level, your quality service level in your operations is good. But if you have good HR, I do not feel that is very much of a challenge. Mm-hmm. I've learned, by the way, a lot from my relationships with management of the Taj group, Taj hotels. Obviously, when I'm in India, I have to stay somewhere, and I tend to talk a lot with the people. And I always felt that everybody in India is willing. Everybody is willing, but quality is sometimes very poor. But in the Taj hotels, the quality is always top notch. And then I said, okay, how do you not only have that initial quality, but how are you able to sustain the quality? And so what's the difference between this first step and the 10th step? And I say, well, that's simple. Keep on training. Do not think that if you have given the initial training, then that's fine, then people will know what to do and they will keep on doing it. Keep on having training sessions and making people aware of the quality that that people need to have. And that's also what I did in my company, making sure that the operational services are trained continuously. So that's one. The challenging part in my business is software development and making sure that I have the people that do product development at the right quality level. And that might be typical for technology. But 20 years ago, software development was a profession in itself. People could develop software, and they developed software for whatever business. It was not necessary to have any understanding of that business. The only thing they needed to do is programming. That has changed. Software development is not some kind of iconic profession. It's just an engineering job. You have people doing road construction and you have people doing software development. Mm-hmm. And you need to understand what you develop software for. So you need to have an interest in the domain. So in my part of the business, I need people who understand traffic, who understand transport, who understand public transportation. They must be willing to read scientific newspapers, articles, etc., and understand how it works, making a study out of it, and use software development as a tool, not as a purpose. Mm-hmm. And that's different in India compared to Europe. In Europe, I think this status has already been achieved. People developing software, they have an intrinsic knowledge about the business and use the software development tools as a tool. In India, it's still considered software development as a profession, and people do not care too much about the actual business. And making sure that you select the people that love the business itself and want to create something that is put in life, that's the challenge, because people will not know that at the moment you recruit them. So it's about talent hunting.
Yeah, interesting. And yeah, interesting. The TAS group, for everybody who doesn't know this, is a part of the Tata group, so the largest company in India, although Reliance is maybe now even larger. But and indeed, that's always what we hear also a lot of people saying, how can it be that those five-star hotels, the service is so excellent, and when I go out of this hotel, the service becomes crap. So what's going on? This is two different worlds there. So I like that that example that you gave. And someone is asking, and that's of course something I would have asked as well, because of course, and we're almost finalizing the webinar. But of course, the current situation with COVID is absolutely very serious in India. You say you employ almost 300 people there. How is the situation at the moment? Of course, office is closed, I imagine, so people are working from home. How is this working out for you?
Yeah, it's a bad situation. Our local business, especially the business that is out on the roads, that has more or less been stalled at present. Mm-hmm. Our outsourcing business, so the business where we develop our products for Europe, that is continuing, and there is a lot of business. IT in general is doing quite well during the COVID crisis, but working from home in India is really something different compared to working from home in Europe. People have different homes, and people are used to work in teams under direct supervision. That's how people were work. They were not trained, educated, groomed to work independently. So when you take them out of their team and drop them home and you say, now your place to work has changed from the office to home, then there's a huge degradation in productivity. And that's what we are experiencing. So I'm hoping that the lockdown will be relieved any moment. For us, it's a real pain in productivity. So we have difficulties in making sure that we can live up to our commitment to our clients in Europe because of the pain we are experiencing right now.
Mm. I understand. Jan, it's almost 10:30. I think I would like to round off. Thanks for your time, your insights, and your stories. has been very, I think people will like it a lot. I have seen some of the questions. I put some of the questions to you. For everybody who has been listening and watching, if you have any more questions to ask or specifically to Jan, please send them to us. We will make sure that that you get an answer. And maybe as a follow-up, for I saw this, a third of the listeners are not doing business in India yet, and they don't know if this is the way to go. So we have developed basically a new product. That's a workshop. That's a tailor-made workshop to discuss with management teams how they should go about their sales strategy in India, their go-to-market strategy. So if you want to say, okay, this has been very inspiring, I want to make this next step, please get in touch with us and we can organize a tailor-made made workshop. We will get the right people on board and you can have all important players on your side around the table, and we can do a session like this. Okay, I want to round it off. I want to wish you all a very good day. Stay safe and healthy. Jan, once again, thanks for your time, and see you soon, I hope. And to all of you, goodbye.
Bye-bye.